This is the story of a drug conviction that had an outcome that may transform the way healthcare is delivered in the American prison system. Nicholas Glisson was just 37 days into an 8-year prison sentence for a felony drug charge. He had specific medical needs as a result of laryngeal cancer, but his cancer was fully manageable. In prison, though, he was under the care of Corizon Health, a private company providing medical care to prisoners in Indiana's Department of Corrections. But Nicholas Glisson died on October 10th, 2010, and this is how his mother, Alma Glisson, remembers him.
Nick is my firstborn son. In 1960, he was 9 pounds, 4 ounces, a good, healthy baby. And he grew into a great young man, was married, had 2 children. He had 5 siblings, and we all miss him very much. He was always there for us. He was a great guy. That's why I miss him, because he was so great, and he is my son.
What happened to Nicholas and what it means for private prison contractors if a jury rules in his family's favor is the subject of this week's Case in Point from the Marshall Project. Andrew Cohen, commentary editor at the Marshall Project and author of Case in Point, says health care and prison sentencing often come into very serious conflict.
What happened to Nicholas Glisson is, I think people who have a bad experience in a hospital can relate to it. If you've ever been in a bad hospital with a loved one or maybe yourself, where each of the nurses goes in and out, they're on shifts, they don't really talk to one another. The doctors come at different times, they don't necessarily confer with each other, and if they do, they don't confer with you. And what happened was Corizon, this is the allegation of the complaint, the allegation in the case that is now looks like it's going to go to a jury. The argument is that every nurse and doctor did what he or she thought that they could do to help. But in the overall scheme of the medical treatment of this man, it was a complete failure. The right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing. One doctor would be concerned about the mental health of the inmate, and yet another doctor already was treating him for mental health problems. There was a question about feeding, nutrition. One doctor ordered that he be fed manually so that he could get some sustenance. That order was never fulfilled. And what the courts so far have seen is this notion that you can have a conscious choice by a company to have such a managed care program that fails in so many ways that it actually rises to the level of a constitutional violation, or a violation that at least could generate a money damage award. And that's why that's where we are at this stage of the case.
How do courts view individuals who, in addition to whatever they've been convicted of, have medical conditions that could exacerbate or threaten their lives while they're in custody, and thus adding a dimension to their sentence that isn't explicitly referred to in the actual sentencing?
Yeah, I mean, that's another element of this case and why I thought it was significant to sort of share. This was clearly a disabled man. He had cancer. He was surviving with cancer. But it was made clear to the prosecutor, it was made clear to the sentencing judge that this was a man who was going to need an awful lot of intense day-to-day, hour-to-hour medical care in prison. The doctor who was treating Nicholas Glisson at the time of his sentencing said so, told the judge, "I don't think this is a good candidate for confinement. He's doing okay on his own. He's able to live independently. He's able to help his grandmother, for example. But if you put him in prison, it's not going to go well." And yet the prosecutor pushed ahead. The sentencing judge pushed ahead with an 8-year sentence. And this is the result of it. And let me back up. The reason why Nicholas Glisson was in this kind of trouble to begin with is that he had been caught selling 2 oxycodone pills to a person he thought was a friend who evidently turned out to be a confidential informant. So this was not the kind of serious crime that you equate with somebody who is disabled, who is forced to go to prison.
Although it is the case that he wasn't a drug kingpin, but with all of the discussion of the opioid crisis, how are courts to deal with this as a serious crime and acknowledge the fact that there are extenuating circumstances with people like Nicholas?
That's exactly right. And that was the issue that the trial judge, the sentencing judge faced in 2010. And the decision he made was to send it was a plea deal, but to sentence him to 8 years. The idea was that he would serve four and he would eventually go home. And of course, he didn't last, 2 months inside that facility. Again, in a lot of these cases, and we've covered them before, there is some doctor who is particularly negligent in the treatment or care. There is a situation where an inmate is, left on the floor for 3 or 4 days and not fed and not given water and so forth. We've seen these cases over and over again. This wasn't that. There were doctors and nurses with Corizon who were trying to help Nicholas Glisson. In the end, though, they simply couldn't give him the level of care that you could argue the Constitution requires him to get. And it'll be fascinating to see if this case does go to a jury, what jurors are going to say about the level of care. I think that's why Corizon is so concerned about this case, right? If you get a jury verdict here, and if you get this idea that there can be liability, even when there's not necessarily a single smoking gun, then it raises the possibility of expanded liability in other prison cases. And of course, Corizon has a lot of these cases going.
And so this is a privatized facility in the criminal justice system that claims it could take care of an individual with a medical condition that required constant care and failed miserably.
Yes, this is a public facility contracting out its health care to the private prison healthcare giant Corizon, which went to court, defended itself, said, look, we were not deliberately indifferent. Our doctors and nurses did the best they could. And there is some traction for that. There were a lot of the claims that were made by the family that were thrown out of court. But this one case, this sort of novel, if you will, approach to corporate liability has survived. And again, I think there's a lot at stake, not just for the inmates and their families who may in the future want to bring a case like this or a claim like this, but for the companies who are defending themselves in these sorts of situations. If there is liability here and it sticks, you may see more liability. And I think that's why this is one of those cases where there's a lot more at stake than just what's at stake to the family.
Andrew, thank you so much for illuminating a complicated case with a lot of implications depending upon the outcome here.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Andrew Cohen is the commentary editor at the Marshall Project and author of Case in Point, a biweekly column exploring a single case or character that sheds light on the criminal justice system.